Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors and shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Only a few days remain between now and Christmas Day, a holiday celebrated in the United States with oftentimes too much food, extravagant spending, and festive parties. Although Christmas brings families and friends together, many sadly champion the day without a single mention of Jesus Christ, the one whose birth we are supposed to be recognizing. This is not a time either when we want to even allow a thought to enter our head about the dark places of the world where hunger, terror, and unspeakable exploitation are the daily norm. My guest today, Derek Williams, more commonly known as DJ, has traveled to those remote places of the world and shed light on the need of the people who reside there through his writing and involvement in the entertainment industry. Born and raised in Hong Kong, DJ has ventured into the jungles of the Amazon, the bush of Africa, and the slums of the Far East. A TV producer, director, and author, DJ draws on his knowledge of multiple cultures to bring a unique perspective to his creative endeavors, both on screen and in his writing. DJ is the author of the Guardian series, currently consisting of The Disillusioned and Waking Lazarus. These fast-paced novels with riveting characters and suspenseful plot lines take the reader on a suspenseful and thought-provoking adventure. Good morning and welcome to the show, DJ.
Hey, Patty, it's good to be with you. Man, I want to read those books now.
Well, I just finished reading The Disillusioned a couple of nights ago, DJ, and let me tell you, it kept me up past my bedtime.
Oh, good. Perfect. That's what I want. That's
like they say, an author loves to hear nothing more than a reader to say, "I'm so mad at you. You kept me up half the night with your dumb book."
Well, that's great. Well, it makes me feel better about staying up late at night writing whatever was coming to me then. That's good. Perfect.
Yes, I really enjoyed the story, DJ, and we'll be talking about that further on in the show here. But first, I would like to ask you, what childhood circumstances influenced the manner in which you express your creativity today?
Well, you know, I remember I was about 8 years old, and I remember picking up Treasure Island and sitting in my bedroom one weekend and just reading it cover to cover. I couldn't pull myself away, and I was so drawn into the story and the characters that, you know, it never occurred to me at that time that one day I would get to create my own characters and my own stories. But there was something about that point where I knew, I didn't know what it would look like, but I knew that in the years ahead I wanted to be a storyteller. And, you know, when I got older, that took a lot of different forms, you know, in the music business and then with what I do today. But I think when you strip it all the way, I feel like I'm a storyteller at heart. That's just part of my DNA and part of what, you know, God's calling on my life is.
DJ, I'd be curious to know, you grew up in Hong Kong. And to me, that's fascinating to hear of a person who grows up in a different country. How do you think your experience was different from what a child may have experienced in the United States, or having lived in a big city like Hong Kong? Was it that different, do you think?
Well, it was for me, you know, growing up over there, I thought that's just was normal, you know, but
sure.
Now looking back, I've got friends that I grew up with in grade school and they live all over the world and we still stay connected through Facebook and and email and stuff. And it just, it gave you a different perspective, more of kind of a global perspective. You know, you were immersed in different cultures that were all around you. I learned Cantonese at the same time I learned to speak English.
Wow. You know,
and it's just something that's always stuck with me. When people ask me where I'm from, you know, I've lived in LA for many years now, but I still consider myself as being from Hong Kong, you know, because that's mm-hmm. where I was born. That's where I was raised. And, you know, it really shaped kind of my passion for storytelling to be more than, you know, a little town in the U.S. or whatever. You know, all my stories are kind of international thrillers, if you want to call them that.
Yes.
Because I've been to almost all the places that I write about. So,
when you first came to the United States for the first time, how old were you, DJ?
Well, I was. We came back to the U.S. about three times between when I was born and when I was 15. About every 4 years or so, we would come back. My parents were missionaries, so. You know, they do the furlough thing, and we'd come back here mm-hmm. to the States and spend most of our time driving across the U.S., going from church to church, sharing with them about the work my parents were doing in Hong Kong. You know, and I have to tell you, Patty, I'm not a perfect person, and neither are my two brothers. And so about 2 weeks into our trek across the U.S., we were already rebelling against my dad preaching the same sermon in every church. So,
do we go? We've heard this 20 times.
well, it actually went to another level. You know, he would do his slideshow because back then that's how you did it. And, you know, he'd say, and on this next slide, this is the Great Wall of China. And when that picture would come up, it'd actually be me and my brothers at Disneyland. Like we were notorious for messing with my dad a lot during that time.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness. That's funny. Did you think that when you came here as a kid, did you think the United States was that much different from Hong Kong?
Well, there was definitely a little culture shock. You know, I'll tell you one quick story is, my first day of high school here, because we came back, I was starting 10th grade. My first day of high school, they start handing out all the school books. And I got to tell you, for a minute there, I really thought I won the lottery, because all the textbooks they were handing out, I had taken all those same classes in 7th grade at the American school in Hong Kong.
Oh,
and
my.
So literally, my entire high school career, 10th, 11th, 12th grade, every class I took, I had already taken all those classes with the same textbooks, same assignments. So, you know, I thought, well, this is a pretty good way to start out back in the States. So I'm just going to ride this thing till it's done.
Boy, I guess. How interesting,
yeah.
Huh? So that goes to show that the education level over there is fairly higher than it is here in the States. And I've heard that too.
Yeah, I mean, it's much more advanced. You know, we went to I went to a British school for grade school. We came back to the States for a year. And then when we went back to Hong Kong, I started back at the American school. So, you know, it was really interesting, just a different perspective. You know, you had friends that were from all different walks of life and all different backgrounds and,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, just their friends I still have today, which is great.
Sure. Wow. It sounds like a really exciting childhood, DJ.
I'll tell you that.
You spent much of your life in full-time ministry, but from what I've read, it seems that your experience on the Zambezi River was kind of the catalyst that sparked your writing career and moved your ministry in a totally different direction. Can you tell us about that turning point? And for those of us who are geography challenged, Could you share for us a little bit about where the Zambezi River is and where it runs to and all those things that people like me aren't really familiar with?
Yes, sure. You know, when we came back to the States, I played basketball a lot. That was my dream, to one day become a pro player somewhere, even if it was overseas. And I ended up going to Bible college for a year. And I got to tell you, I never thought I would go into full-time ministry. You know, I saw the challenges and a lot of the things my family had to go through to do that. And I thought, you know, God, use me in any way you want. Just don't use me that way, you know. And sure enough, I walked in a church here in L.A. and I saw a guy leading worship. And, you know, God, you know, I don't know how it works for most people, but, you know, I sensed a kind of a God speaking to me, not like an audible voice, but really kind of pressing on my heart that I was going to help this worship leader one day. And I said, well, if that's really from God, then I'm not going to force it. I'm not going to ask. I'm not going to push for it. And I sat in the back row of this church for the next 4 years and just kept praying. My wife and I were working in different careers. And sure enough, one day I had lunch with this worship leader, and that started a 12-year partnership together where we did ministry, and we built a worship ministry and record label that literally reached thousands of people around the world. We led worship with some of the biggest pastors in the world, and we used the funds generated from the record sales to help people in some of the poorest places in the world. Now, fast forward to those 3 days on the Zambezi, which is in Zambia, in the heart of Africa, and I had gone from watching God open up all these doors to knowing that my season in this part of ministry was going to come to an end, but not knowing what was going to happen next. Mm-hmm. And on the Zambezi River, I was reminded of those few days I spent reading Treasure Island as an 8-year-old kid, and kind of my passion for storytelling. And I just knew one day I was going to write about that place on the Zambezi River. And I didn't know what that would look like. I knew nothing about the publishing business. You know, I knew that I was going to be phasing out of the music side. And over the next couple of years, through a different chain of events, I ended up producing and directing a pilot for a new TV show. And that show has been on the air ever since. And I've produced and directed over 400 broadcast shows around the world. And, you know, God's kind of moved me into a whole different place, but the writing thing was always part of it. And so I started writing The Disillusion. I didn't tell anyone I was writing it. I didn't, you know, I just kept working, producing TV, directing TV. And it wasn't until I got the book done that I sent it out to a friend of mine who's in the TV business and said, look, no one else has seen this. If it's bad, just let me know. No one will ever have to know this ever existed, you know? And she gave me the thumbs up, said, you've got to try and get it published. And so I went through the process of getting an agent. You know, we pitched the book around, got the book ready to come out. And here's kind of my punchline for this story is that, my wife didn't even know I was writing this book until I handed her the author copies that came in the mail. And I said, hey, check this out.
Oh, my goodness. I probably would have looked at it and said, oh, somebody has the same name as you.
Well, what's funny is she starts reading it, you know, and she's already trying to figure out which characters are the real people and which ones are the ones that are made up.
Sure. Am I in this book, DJ? She said.
Yeah, no, I told her. I said, you got nothing to worry about. You're not in here. It's all good. So I have to keep reminding everyone it's fiction. It's not historical. So.
How fun, though, DJ, to have kept it a secret for that long, boy. That's amazing that you were able to do that.
Well, and I tell you, it's kind of a rhythm that I've gotten into now. When I wrote Waking Lazarus, no, I didn't let anyone read that book until it was out, like not even a hint of what was in it. And I don't know, it's just more fun that way.
Yeah. And, you know, I've also read that the more you talk, I don't know how to describe this, if I can say it right. The more you talk about your story, the more it becomes diffused through so many people that you lose that impact within yourself to write it. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, totally. I think it's that, and it's also writing always takes way longer than you think. And so
when you're
telling people about your story and then it takes you, you know, another year to finish it, mm-hmm. then that story feels old to them. They're like, oh, I heard you talking about that like a year ago, you know? So
yeah.
I try to not talk about it at all. In fact, the novel I'm writing now, no one even has a clue what it is, which is great.
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, wow, that's an exciting story, DJ. I think that's pretty neat. Well, from reading The Disillusioned, as I said, I finished it a couple of nights ago, and it's a fast-paced novel. It's filled with mystery and suspense and, heaven knows, plenty of action.
Well,
and
good.
Some of the scenes, DJ, in this book are so graphic that they're almost bone-chilling, and I would even go far as to say horrific and shocking to readers. What message is it that you meant to convey in this story?
Well, as I've shared in different arenas, you know, part of the storyline of The Disillusioned has to do with the fight against human trafficking.
Yes.
And I've got friends that are part of these organizations that are working every day to not only rescue women and children, but help kind of rehabilitate them and so they can reenter society. And from talking with those guys, I just knew if you're going to go there, if you're going to share that part of the world, if you're going to write about that part of the world, if you try and water it down too much, then you're not honoring the people that have survived being trafficked. And so
mm-hmm.
that was a decision I had to make early on, that I want to convey the reality of what that world is like. And if it makes someone uncomfortable, if it makes them, you know, stop for a moment while they're reading a certain chapter, then my hope is it will get them thinking about how can I be a part of helping to make a difference for those that are being trafficked. And so it was more than just shock value. I think it was my desire to really capture the reality of what so many of these women and children have endured and survived.
Yeah, DJ, it's haunting to the point where you almost feel a great sense of shame and guilt if you don't do something, you know?
it's difficult.
Even if it's telling somebody else about your book. I mean, even if you don't do something to kind of, you know, whether it's, and we're going to get to this in a minute, contribute some mm-hmm. some funds to whatever or make people aware or, I mean, it just, you can't put that book down without continuing to think about the horror that goes on there. You just can't do it.
Well, I appreciate the kind words because that's really was my intention, you know, and I think we can all do something, you know, whether it's supporting organizations that are in the fight, whether it's raising awareness through social media, you know, and there's all kinds of ways that we can get this message out. Because when you think about it, you know, the statistics on human trafficking are really staggering. You know, 21 million people are trafficked around the world. That number continues to grow. 1.5 million in the U.S. alone. There's
mm-hmm.
$32 billion of profits generated globally. So it is a global business. And when you think about it, if there wasn't a demand for it, it wouldn't exist. And so
yes.
what we need to do is we need to help get rid of the demand. You know, 140 countries have criminalized sex and labor trafficking since 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and trafficking isn't just what, you know, we term as modern day slavery. You know, it's also it's prostitution, it's pornography, it's sex tourism, it's
yes.
forced marriages, it's sweatshop work. You know, there's all kinds of ways that this shows itself, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like another guest who was on the show here a few weeks ago brought out too, it's that sick demand of our population for these innocent young girls, well, and young men too. I mean, it's we don't want people to think that only ladies and girls are involved. You know, men and boys are involved
yeah.
in this too.
Yeah.
And you know that
yeah, totally.
That very sick, twisted attitude that we have anymore about sex in general. I mean, it's really sad.
Yeah. Well,
that has
what
been
I found was interesting.
So much.
Yeah, what I found was, you know, interesting in writing the book was, you know, I kind of my world is I have a lot of Christian friends. I have a lot of non-Christian friends, you know, and I thought it was interesting after the book came out and people were reading it. You know, I had some friends that would say, you know, your villains in the book, they have to have redeeming values about them, you know. And then other
mm-hmm.
friends would be like, well, no, the villains in the book, how could they have redeeming values? And so that was kind of, it was interesting to me because I'd be in certain groups that were, you know, from different viewpoints.
Yes.
And, you know, it really makes you start thinking about the people that are behind all this, you know, what really motivates them, you know, to do it. And I don't know. I come back down to the thing of it comes down to money, you know, when it's $32 billion that's being made, then it's about power, money. And it's something that if we don't stand up against it, it will just continue to increase year after year.
That's absolutely right. Well, while we're talking about things that we can do for this problem, DJ, tell us about the International Justice Mission, and I believe that you have made an offer regarding your book as far as funds going toward that mission, if I'm correct?
Yeah. You know, over this last year, we've started kind of in connection with the books, what we're calling the Guardian Alliance. And so every month we'll take proceeds from the book sales and they'll go to different organizations. And so for December, we're focusing on the International Justice Mission. And they're a really, really great organization which is involved with the fight against slavery. You know, it's interesting. They've got over 750 lawyers, investigators, social workers, community activists that work through 17 field offices around the world. And,
wow.
you know, I guess it's the one time you can like an attorney, right? When they're fighting against all this.
There you go.
But you know, so for December, we're going to take whatever proceeds we make from the books and send it to them and just be a small part of what they're doing there. You know, and for me, it's one of those things, too, where you know how it is when you're promoting yourself and you're promoting your book. You know, after a while, it's like, I don't really want to have to promote myself anymore. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You're
yeah.
like, I don't want to be the promotional guy. But when we tie the books to these organizations, then I have no problem stepping out and telling anyone and everyone about these books because it's a way that we can make a difference. Like one example, leading into this month, there's an organization called December. And they're also involved with fighting against human slavery. And they did a special promotion. So, like, the first guy that raised $750 got the Guardian novel package, you know. And so any way that I can be a part of helping to spread that message, I'm going to do it. You know, this year we've also supported Compassion International, St. Jude's Children Research Hospital, Habitat for Humanity, Feeding America, Charity Water. And, you know, it's just, it's fun for me because I'm like, the more books we sell, the more people are reading this message and reading the story. But then at the end of the day, the more money we're able to give away to these organizations and let them go do what they do best.
Yes. Well, having said that, DJ, this is the perfect place for me to take what I call a little break, which is where I make listeners aware of who and what they are listening to, because we do have listeners that come into the show after it has started, and therefore I like to identify ourselves. Listeners, you are listening to Step Into the Light this morning. I am your host, Patty Sheen. I am thrilled to have guest Derek Williams, otherwise known as DJ. DJ is an author. He is also involved in the entertainment business as a producer and director. We've been spending the first part of the show talking about his book, The Disillusioned, which is I found it to be quite a fascinating mystery, suspense, action story, kept me up nights. And he, among other things, he deals with in that story with the issue of human trafficking, especially in foreign countries, and we have been talking about that. We've been talking about the fact that DJ is offering for his profits from this book during the month of December to go to the International Justice Mission, which tries to combat trafficking and slavery and all of those horrific kind of things that occur. DJ can be found on his website at djwilliamsbooks.com. He also has Facebook and Twitter connections, but I'm not going to give you URLs for that right now because I'm going to refer you to my website, which is pattysheen.com. That's spelled PattySheen.com, all one word. And when you go there, you will find a Blog Talk Radio tab, and under that tab, you will find all of our shows and information about all of our guests. So if you want to learn more about DJ and what he does, just go to the website and you will find the links to get to his information. As DJ was saying, he supports many of the organizations that I'm familiar with, Feeding America and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and Compassion International and all these different organizations. So He's quite a fascinating person, and he has done so much to make people aware of the needs of so many. So, DJ, let's get back to our discussion. Another thing I wanted to ask you about The Disillusioned, among other themes in that book, you wrote about the consequences that we face when we fail to acknowledge the truth and we try to cover it up with ugly lies. So how can we as Christians see through lies so cleverly told to get to the truth?
What's Patty, that's a very deep question. You know, I don't know if I have an answer to that. I mean, I'll tell you the one thing that comes to mind, and this is what I've learned just over the years, is that the stronger the relationships you have in your life, the easier it is, I believe, to walk out your faith. You know, and I'm talking like honest relationships. And so, you know, I've got a group of guys that are close to me, and they know, you know, stuff that I deal with, the challenges, the successes, all that kind of stuff. And those are the guys that kind of keep me in check, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think oftentimes when, you know, when you're trying to hide something, I guess, you know, the best way to put that, a lot of times what I've seen is people will withdraw and not have that group around them. And so I've just found that, you know, it's the quality of friends, not the quantity, you know, and it's not, this may not be the right way to say it, but you need something deeper than just Facebook friends. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So you know, I think a lot of people now, because of social media, you could have a lot of friends and a lot of followers on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, but not really a lot of relationships, you know? And I think having those close relationships with people that will speak honestly with you and will walk with you through, you know, the good and the bad times, I think that helps kind of avoid those dark corners of your life.
Well, I think that's an excellent answer, DJ.
Well, good. All right, I'm done.
So thank you.
I should drop the mic right now. I should be done. Just that's it. Oh, that's funny.
Well, that kind of leads into the next question, DJ, because when you mentioned dark times, because the premise of this show is for people who have been through dark times to share how they have survived those dark times and found their way back to light, and how through their ministry they do that. And of course, you have done that with your ministries in so many ways. But if you would, tell us about a dark time in your life and how you found your way back to light. It could have been through in trying to write that next word in your novel, or or something going on with your entertainment industry, or I'm sure you've been through a dark time.
Well, I can go back to 2006, about 11 years ago. I was still kind of getting my feet under me from transitioning out of ministry. And I'll tell you the biggest challenge, it's easier when you're in ministry to tell everyone to have faith, just believe more, you know, tithe more, do all those things more. But when you're not in full-time ministry and you're back out in the world, you know, so to speak, then you really find out whether your faith is the real deal, you know. And so the transition out of ministry while I was working on the TV side, you know, brought me to 2006. My mom had battled many challenges for about a decade. She was in and out of the hospital a lot. But at the end of 2006, my wife's dad had a heart attack and surprisingly passed away. 30 days later, my mom passed away unexpectedly.
Oh my goodness.
30 days after that, the ministry that I'd partnered with my friend, was over. And so I went into 2007 with no idea, you know, what was next, how we were going to make it through, you know. And I got to tell you, I wish I could say, man, I just had this undying faith to believe that, man, it's all going to be fine, you know. But oftentimes that's not the case, because you can't see what's around the next corner.
Right.
And, you know, looking back now, I see how God opened the right doors and all that. But there was a season of time where I had to, you know, the best way to put it is I had to rediscover my faith. And I found that by getting on a plane with two buddies of mine and going to the Philippines and shooting a documentary over there in basically the slums. It was a landfill where 14,000 families live in the landfill. And we spent time with these families. We got to know the kids and the parents. And as we're filming their stories, the faith and the love that they had for God really, I would say, brought me back to my faith, helped me hold on to my faith, you know, after, you know, everything that I'd seen and everything I'd seen my parents go through in the church. And oftentimes, I got to tell you, if we're keeping it real, you know, oftentimes as believers, we accept people when they believe what we believe. But
yes,
when they start to struggle in their faith or they start to question their faith, we're very quick to set those people aside because we don't want people to think we're going down that road.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I shared about the group of guys that are around me that keep me in check, those are the guys that don't that didn't leave my side when I was sitting there going, what in the world is going on? You know, is God really going to see me through? And those guys never stepped away. And I think, you know, that's the kind of Christ follower I want to be. I don't want to be the guy that sits in the back of the church pew on Sunday morning and then doesn't do anything the rest of the week. You know,
exactly.
I want to be the guy that wraps his arm around a buddy who's going through a hard, difficult time and, you know, keep that confidential and not spread it on social media. You know, those are the kind of lessons that I'm learning. And it was going through that period of time in my life in 2006, 2007, where my faith had to become more than just working for God. You know, it had to become about going deeper in my personal relationship with Him. And, you know, I got to tell you, it hasn't been perfect since then either. But, you know, I get up each morning and try my best.
Yeah, and I think that's about the best we all can do, DJ. But thank you for sharing that with us. I had a similar experience, not near as intense as yours, but my mom passed away in March of 2016, and then my husband passed away in June of 2016. So I know what you mean. When you have that grief is kind of piled one on top of the other, it's very difficult. And yeah, it can be really dark there and sometimes kind of hard to see the light. And I can't remember who said it, some famous person that whose name escapes me now, said that faith encompasses something about being on the staircase in the dark when the candle is so small that you can only see the step in front of you. You can only see that one step in front of you, but you keep going. And I think that that's what we have to do. And sometimes it's just not near as easy as it sounds.
Yeah. Well, there's a line in The Disillusion that was very personal to me. And it's the line that says, faith lives in the gray. And you can translate that a few different ways, but our faith is not black and white. You know,
it's not.
Just because you read the print in the Bible doesn't mean that is the easiest thing in the world to walk out on a daily basis. And it's in those moments where, you know, we're angry about our situation, we're hurt about our situation, we feel guilty about our situation. It's in those gray moments of life that God shows himself so that our faith can go deeper. You know, when everything's going perfect, you don't really need faith. You know,
exactly.
And when everything's going terrible, faith is probably the last thing that's coming to your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in those moments of life where everything around you seems like it's kind of blurry, you know, and it's in those moments that God brings kind of that clarity and that 2020 vision where faith kind of sees us through, I think.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about in our Bible studies at my church often, we have a hard time understanding God and why things happen, and that's because we are the finite trying to understand the infinite.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes, Patty, there is no explanation here on earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we won't know the answer to those questions until we stand face to face with God himself, you know. And
that's
so,
right.
You know, and I got to tell you, bad things that happen to people or difficult circumstances that happen to people that are believers does not translate into they have a lack of faith. You know?
They have a lack of faith or it's because of their sins.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Another famous one, popular one, belief.
Well, I think far too quickly, we may not come out and say that, but when we see someone that goes through, you know, whether it's an addiction or whatever it is, oftentimes we're quick to step away,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's kind of doing the same thing without saying it out loud. And I think the real thing that God's calling us to do is to roll up our sleeves, you know, step out of that pew and get our hands a little dirty with people that are not perfect because we are the same way.
Yes, we are.
Boy, we got on a big theology conversation. This is fun.
Well, we should. That's why I love doing these shows, because you just never know.
That's awesome. I should be careful.
I mean, Patty, I should be careful
because I got kicked out of Bible college after my first year, so I shouldn't be preaching too much theology.
Okay, well, we'll get back on safe territory here, DJ.
Yeah, good. I was getting a little nervous.
Well, The Disillusioned, it was the first book in your Guardian series, and the second book, Waking Lazarus, has since come out, and I haven't read that one yet, so give us a little sneak preview of what that one is about.
Well, here's what's interesting, and I did this on purpose, part of my madness, I guess. I wrote The Disillusioned, and when I got done, I knew the story wasn't over. There was a much bigger world to explore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started writing Waking Lazarus. Now, Waking Lazarus has all different characters, completely different storylines, but the timeline of The Disillusioned and Waking Lazarus is parallel. And so I did that because, as you know, like building your reader base and everything, I wanted people to pick up Waking Lazarus and read it if they hadn't read The Disillusioned.
Right.
So you can read both books out of order, but
okay. They
all make sense when you get to the end. And then the third book in the series is going to bring all those characters and all those storylines together.
Oh, cool.
And then the series will keep going. So that was part of my madness. It basically, with Waking Lazarus, it's my main character, Jake Harris. He's a
mm-hmm.
guy whose life hasn't turned out the way he planned. He's battling his addictions and the shattered pieces of his family. And then he's hired to ghostwrite a memoir. And so what we find is from the 1920 story of a controversial evangelist to the present day mystery of a former district attorney, everything changes when Jake's search for the truth leads to an atrocity hidden from history. With a past he can't remember, he begins to discover that he is not the person he believed himself to be. Rather, he is a threat to a secret society that has remained in the shadows for nearly a century. Jake is drawn deep inside a world he never knew existed that brings him closer to his own extraordinary destiny. And if you've read The Disillusioned, as you're reading through Waking Lazarus, there's going to be plenty of aha moments where you're like, oh, I see how this ties together. So that's what I've done.
Well, thanks a lot, DJ. Now I'm going to have to go out and buy Waking Lazarus. And, you know, it's going to be about book number 560 on my stack of to-be-read books.
Oh, no. That's awesome. Well, move it up to number one, Patty, and get to it.
I have to, because I just finished The Disillusioned. So, you know, I've got that taste for your writing style now in my blood here.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, that's awesome. Well, good. Then my master plan worked. Perfect.
Absolutely. DJ, you told us a little bit about what led you into the entertainment business, sort of, but I would like to know more about what you actually do. Tell us about the shows that you have produced. Like, where can we watch them on TV?
Sure. One of the shows we have on the air right now is a show called Restoration Road with Mitch Cruz, and it's on NBC affiliates. It's on 65 channels around the world. We just found out not too long ago that it's actually on ABC in Australia in their 3 o'clock Monday hour, which is really great. It used to be Oprah's slot, so now we took that slot over. And that show's in its 14th season. You can find out like where it's airing in your area off of MitchCruz.com, K-R-U-S-E. And Mitch is a good buddy of mine. He's a really great guy, and he hosts his show, and he features people that have overcome extreme things in their life and applies it to the Bible, and he's a really, really awesome awesome guy. So you should check that out. And then, you know, being that I'm out in LA, me and my production partner, we're constantly developing and pitching both scripted and unscripted shows. We have a game show that's making the rounds right now. I've got a scripted 1-hour drama that I've written and created that's over at like Warner Brothers and Lionsgate and a lot of the studios here that they're looking at it, taking it under consideration. And uh-huh. You know, we're constantly working on projects that are being pitched and going out. And we have a music show right now that we're getting ready to take out after the first of the year. And so, you know, what people don't realize when they think about Hollywood is, you know, it's glamorous for about 5 seconds, and then you realize it's just a lot of work and a lot of hustle. So,
yeah.
You know, and that's what's kind of fun for me is I get to do shows that are faith-based, but then I get to do shows that aren't. And, you know, I look at that as kind of like growing up on the mission field in Hong Kong, you know, I think the missionary thing's in my DNA. And mm-hmm. I just look at that as another mission field to walk out my faith and hopefully have an impact on people that we come across.
Exactly. You know, speaking of what you just said about Hollywood, I saw an interview with, who is the guy that died recently? David Cassidy.
Okay, yeah.
And he talked about how, I mean, he just literally gave his whole life to his filming and all that. He really had no life of his own. You know, there wasn't a lot of the oh, sure, you know, he was a teen idol and all that. But, I mean, to actually have a life of his own, it sounds like he just ran himself ragged to keep up. And,
yeah,
of course, he ended up in, you know, some not-so-good behaviors and things. And it was kind of sad, actually.
Well, I think if the pursuit is for fame, it'll never be enough, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think for me and the guys that I work with, you know, it really comes down to the stories we're telling, you know, the messages we're trying to communicate, the people that hopefully will be changed through the shows, and I think that helps give you a good perspective so you're not chasing the wrong horse, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, I've been fortunate going on my 10th, 11th year next year of having shows on the air. And you know, who knows what next year will bring, but you just keep pursuing your craft. And I love writing, so anytime mm-hmm. I get the crossover from books to TV, you know, I'm the first guy in line to say, let me do it.
Sure. Sure. Well, maybe you could share with us, DJ, how can Christian artists and entertainers make their voices heard above those many, many voices in Hollywood who promote ungodly principles and practices in the media today? I mean, it's all over. It's everywhere anymore.
Well, I think I would say this. I think I've met a lot of people in the entertainment business that are great people, you know, and some are believers, some are not believers. And I think sometimes Hollywood gets a bad rap. I mean, right now, you know, of course what's coming out is horrible. But what I would say across the board, like if we looked at the entertainment business, but you know, to be honest with you, let's look at the church world. You know, many of the things that happen in Hollywood happen in the church world as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if you're looking at the business side of Hollywood, the way you're going to make an impact is be really good at your craft. You know, if you're a producer, be the best producer they can hire. Be
mm-hmm.
the best director
mm-hmm.
they can hire. Be the best writer they can hire. And walk your faith out in those situations. But, you know, if you're not good at what you do, you're never going to be able to influence people. You know,
exactly.
And I think if we look at kind of the world of the church, how do you make your voices heard? You know, walk your life out with authenticity. and mm-hmm. share about the struggles you're going through, share about the victories you've encountered, you know, but speak the truth. Don't try and cover it up, you know, because I can tell you, I've met some shady guys in the music business and in the entertainment business. But Patty, I can tell you on the flip side, I've met some shady people in the church business too, to be
sure.
honest with
oh,
you.
Yeah.
And so
absolutely.
Too often we point the finger at Hollywood as, you know, the church points the finger at Hollywood as look at how these people are, where in reality, Hollywood's pointing the finger back at the church saying, hey, we don't see much difference a lot of times.
Yeah.
And so I think as those that are followers of Christ, we need to step out of that church box and stop pointing fingers at people and actually walk alongside those people for a while and see where they're coming from, what they've gone through in their life, and how can you have an influence in their life one-on-one that goes beyond, you know, entertainment, business, church world, whatever, a relationship that's one-on-one where you can share your personal faith with them of how Christ has impacted your life. And I think that mm-hmm. will have a much longer lasting impact than, you know, trying to bash one side or the other.
Yeah, very true. Very good points, DJ.
And Patty, this is why I don't get invited to speak in churches.
Well, I love having you on the show because you can say just about anything you want here. And
oh, this is perfect.
As
all
long
right.
as you're honest. Well,
let's go for round two. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. When should we schedule the next one?
It's going to turn into being like a counseling show if we're not careful.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. DJ, I would like to know about your latest release, which I know absolutely nothing about, but it's called Street Smarts
sure.
from Proverbs.
Sure.
Now, I'm
well,
under the impression that is not fiction, but is it?
No, it's nonfiction. My buddy Mitch, who I shared about a little earlier, who hosts the Restoration Road TV show, he got a book picked up through Faith Words called Street Smarts from Proverbs. And it basically walks you through the book of Proverbs. And what I like about the book is, you know, Mitch owned a business years ago. He owned the largest collector car auction business in the world and sold it to eBay. And so as he went through Proverbs, and he also got his master's in theology, I mean, he's one of the wisest biblical guys that I've ever known in my entire life. And when he sat down to write Street Smarts from Proverbs, it really helps relate the book of Proverbs to business leaders, to millennials, to moms that are home raising their kids, dads that are home raising their kids. Like, it really applies kind of those principles in Proverbs. And we also included stories from different guests that we've had on the TV program to help kind of tie it all together. And, you know, I would encourage everyone, especially starting out with, you know, the new year coming up, to pick up a copy. And, you know, there's the book, there's a study guide, there's the interviews that we have on Mitch's website. And it's just, it's a really great launching pad into the new year to go through one of the most tightly written books of the Bible, but probably one of the most, the one with the most nuggets, you know, that you can take with you on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always enjoyed the Proverbs, and I love the, I guess you'd call it paraphrasing of the Proverbs in the Message.
Yep.
Because
no,
some of it is just right in your face, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's no other way to interpret it, you know, and like a couple of the key areas, you know, Mitch narrowed it down to 12 words as you go through to help kind of wrap your head around, you know, the 1,000 or more things that are in there. And yes. So, you know, it deals with righteousness, equity, justice, wise behavior, understanding, wise communication, prudence, discretion, wise counsel, discipline, knowledge, and learning, and how you apply those 12 words to your everyday life. And,
mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was happy to jump on board with Mitch and just kind of help him through the writing process and get his message out as clearly as we could.
I think it was Mitch that you did. You have a video on your website.
Yeah,
and
so,
was that the Mitch's show there, the Restoration Road?
Yeah, Mitch had me on to talk about the disillusion and to talk about waking Lazarus. And
yeah.
You know, it's funny. It's the only two times I've stepped out from behind the scenes on his show, and we always have a good time. And you know, Mitch is one of those guys that has walked with me for years. We've been friends for 20 years, and have kind of been, you know, brothers in a way, where he knows everything about my life, I know about his life, and it's that kind of relationship that I was talking about earlier that keeps you kind of walking, you know, walking the line and.
Yes.
And walking out your faith deeper because of guys that are deeper in their faith, you know, that
staying true to yourself.
Yeah, that encourages me to keep going.
Excellent. Well, DJ, we're about at the end of our time. Is there anything, though, that you wish I had asked you that I didn't, that you would really like to share with our listeners this morning?
Well, I don't know. You sure got me to talk about a lot of stuff.
Oh, I didn't do anything now.
Oh, my gosh. I'm afraid to listen back. The phone will start ringing. But no, you know, I think it's.
See
if
why
you're
I don't
writer,
do call-ins on this show, DJ?
Yeah, that could be. We'd be here all day. But, you know, I would say as those of us that are followers of Christ, I think we're all storytellers, you know, to a certain extent. And that might take on a different look, you know, whether you're a writer, whether you're a musician, a singer, you know, whatever it is, God is ingrained in us that DNA of being a storyteller, sharing our faith with other people, you know, and hopefully the projects that I've got coming out and the next novel I'm writing, you know, hopefully that will be the case. You know, it's just a way to open up a conversation, to share your faith. And I'd encourage everyone out there, look for those ways, you know, and to bring it back to the thing we're doing this month with the International Justice Mission. You know, if you can be a part of helping change a life, rescue a child or an adult from slavery, I would encourage you, however that looks in your life, you know, however you can get involved, do it. If it's buying a book, that's great. You know, if it's volunteering somewhere in your local area, then that's awesome too. But find a way to get involved, because this is something that's not going away unless we really
unless we really do something. Are you there, DJ?
Oh, did I lose you?
Yeah, I lost you for a second, but you're back.
Oh, there you are.
The quirks of technology, I guess. You still there?
Yeah, still here. We made it through the whole thing without getting cut off. That was good.
We did. I'll tell you what, DJ, I have had so many problems over the past couple of months. First, I bought a new computer and found out that I had a bad hard drive, and that had to be sent back to the factory, and it took me a month to get that back, and my internet was giving me problems, and, you know, for a while I thought, gee, maybe God doesn't want me to do this, but then I would get emails from people, oh, I'd love to be on your show. It's like, okay. I guess God is saying, you're going to have a rough patch here, but keep going, you know?
Oh, that's the thing. You got to keep pushing ahead.
Yeah, you just never know. So,
awesome.
Okay, well, DJ, I think we need to wrap things up this morning. Thank you again so much. And I wanted to share with you, you're going to get a kick out of this. Before we went on air, we were talking about the weather and how you like your 80 degrees. It's about 40-some here today. And I'm sitting in my room back here that has a patio door. And my dog managed to tear down the curtain that goes over that patio door. And I guess I didn't turn the heat up enough, because this whole show I've been sitting here freezing. I've been thinking about you.
Oh, no.
So you can kind of have a chuckle over that, because I told you how much I like the cold. I like the cold. I don't like being cold. There's a difference.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I like to look at the snow. I don't like to be in the snow.
There you go. Well, DJ, thank you much for your time today. You have shared so much with our listeners, and I really appreciate that. And I'm so blessed that I got to meet you and to get to do a show with you. So may God continue to bless you in all that you do in the entertainment business and in your ministries. And have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas.
Well, you too, Patty. And thanks for allowing me to come on and jabber for a ramble and all those things. You know, I'm a writer. I'm not an editor. Someone should edit what I say.
Well, it's been wonderful, and I will get a copy of Waking Lazarus here pretty soon.
All right, and then don't be mad at me when you get to the end, because I know that might happen.
Uh-oh. Okay, I'll let you know.
All right, great. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. To our listeners, it's been a pleasure to have you with us today. Remember, in closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. Thank you for being with us today. God bless you. I hope to do a show next week. If not, well, I guess Christmas will be over by next week, actually. So hope you all have a merry and blessed Christmas. God bless you all. Don't forget to go to pattysheen.com, pattysheen.com, to check out information about DJ and all of our guests. All of our shows are archived, so if you miss part of this one, or if you'd like to refer it to someone else or listen to it again, please go to that website and check on the Blog Talk Radio tab. God bless you all.
There is a candle in every soul. Some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a candle, and makes it warm.
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions!
More smoky mesquite.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.